Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Later in the show, this is exciting, we'll be hearing from Joe Hunter, who's the chief food lover. That's her official title, the chief food lover at Piglet's Pantry in Sussex, which supplies a number of football clubs with pies and more. I can't wait. Well, I have to say I can't wait. We've already done it, Kieran. It was very good. So we know that. But before that, it's Newsday. And be still my beating heart, Kieran. Guess who we're starting with? We're recording this on Wednesday morning, everybody. It's currently 10:40 Wednesday morning. It's raining outside, so I'm happy. But by the time you listen to this, it could be that the Derby County saga has all but finished in a good way. Except, of course, Kieran, it wouldn't be Derby County without a last-minute twist in the story. And this last-minute twist was supplied by one Paul Stretford, agent to one Wayne Rooney.
Yes. So let's start off with the potential good news. And again, we're both hoping by the time the show goes out on Thursday that Derby County will have had its assets sold by the administrators to David Clowes and his company, which is called Totem Nuco Limited. So I had to dig that out on Companies House. Certainly all the people that have contacted us and we've contacted, it seems to think it's scheduled. Now, scheduled and delivered aren't the same thing. So, fingers crossed, and then we can move forwards. We have said on the show that Chris Kirchner didn't pay the wages in May, and we know that the administrators didn't have the funding to pay them themselves. So, therefore, there had to be a third party. And again, we were aware that it was somebody connected to somebody at the club. And it looks like the S3 agency, as it's known, Paul Stretford, who is Wayne Rooney's agent, have provided the resources. Now, I'm choosing the words carefully here, have provided the resources through which the wages for May have been paid. And that is important, because if Paul Stretford's agency had paid the wages, I think there would have been a potential serious breach of FA regulations. But if they have lent money to the administrators and the administrators have then used that loan to pay the wages, then it's less of an issue. The vibes I'm picking up from Pride Park was that was the method which was used from which to pay wages, which I think is good news. Has there been a breach of Football Association regulations? I think what we've got to say here is it could be a perhaps. If so, it's probably a technical breach, because if you are an agency, then you are not allowed to have any influence over a football club. And if you're not supposed to influence a football club, then lending money through which wages could be paid, could that deemed be a breach? Possibly. We don't know what the stance will be taken by the FA. I think it would be very harsh if the FA then decided they were going to sanction the club So I'm hoping for a bit of common sense here from the FA, finger wagging, exceptional circumstances, don't do it again, and you know, perhaps have a word with the agency. But I believe that the agency, the S3 agency, has contacted the football authorities, so they've tried to be proactive. They said they're disappointed that it came out in the press, which is another reason why we've kept our mouths shut.
Yeah,
because you know, ultimately the most important thing here is the Derby County deal to go through.
So the press, being the press, Kieran, that we have, are less sanguine about the possibility of there being no sanctions. They obviously they want it to be a bigger story, and they're talking about potential points deductions. What's interesting, Kieran, is I can confirm to our listeners that when you said on air that you were going to tell me afterwards who it was, you did say it was that you understood it was Wayne Rooney's agent that had somehow paid the wages. And I, and possibly you, because you're not cynical, I thought, well, that's a good thing. That's well done. If Wayne Rooney's involved and asked him to do that, that's brilliant. They've kept the club going. That's a positive thing. A couple of people phoned me, including a TV producer friend of mine who's a huge Derby fan, home and away, to say, I know you can't tell me who it is, but we think it's Wayne Rooney, and that just proves what a brilliant man he is. But then the Telegraph broke the story, and the way they spin it is that Rooney or Stretford paid the wages that month in order to prop up Chris Kirchner's failing bid for the club, because they had possibly some kind of arrangement with Kirchner going forward about Wayne Rooney's tenure as manager, about money that would be available. And if that is the case, if that's the interpretation, then that's not a good thing, and the FA probably won't be that happy, and that would explain the timing of Wayne Rooney's resignation as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, I mean, and I think some people have, you know, joined the dots in respect of the that series of events. Again, from what I understand, Chris Kirchner is quite good at not picking up the phone at present.
Right.
So perhaps he's taken a leaf out of the Quantumar book of deliberate and strategic non-communication. There was certainly what appeared to be a positive relationship between Chris Kirchner and Wayne Rooney. There were rumours, and if you sort of go through a variety of press stories, that Paul Stretford would potentially have been involved at a senior level at Derby. Now, whether that would have been as a consultant or whatever, and you know, I genuinely don't want to be a cynic in relation to this. You know, would that have put his agency in a more advantageous position than other agencies? Well, potentially it could have done. You know, my view is that you know, I want Derby County to exist. I want Derby County to be playing in League One. And if you have to use this method, and you know, I think everybody got suckered in by Chris Kirchner. You know, not just you know, Wayne Rooney believed Kirchner in terms of his promises. You know, the EFL, they thought they saw proof of funds, as far as they were concerned, signed off by a pretty senior institution as well, in respect of Kirchner's wealth. Yeah. The same as far as Quantumar were concerned. So it's a very sort of, you know, old Billy Liar type of scenario that we've ended up with. But big story is, we're hoping that we've got a Derby County which is owned by somebody local who can provide the funds and reduce the uncertainty. And we can concentrate on talking about the usual nonsense that we talk about over the course of the summer, which is, why haven't you got your checkbook out?
Yeah.
Or, you know, I've seen such and such at a local branch of Greg's. It definitely looked like that. You know, that centre half from that Portuguese club. Spitting image of him. It's got to be him. And that's what we love about the summer in football.
Yeah. There was a rumour went round Palace just after when John Terry was about to retire from Chelsea. Somebody said they'd seen him buying shampoo in the Superdrug in Croydon. And therefore, he was obviously about to wash his hair in a hotel before he went to sign for Palace. Yes, let's hope the FA and the Football League can just not pick at that scab. And let's hope that on Sunday we're able to start with the news that there is only good news from Derby. I like that expression, deliberate and strategic non-communication, or as Uncle Terry would say, keeping strum.
yes.
I think John Terry might get mentioned in the next couple of stories as well, because our next couple of stories are NFT-based. And it's some compensation to know that if Derby disappears from our life, Kieran, NFTs, non-fungible tokens, are always going to be with us. And this first story really, really annoyed me when I first heard it, and it's still annoying me as well. Crawley Town have announced that their new third kit will only be available to fans who buy the club's NFTs.
Yes. As some people, but not all, may be aware, Crawley Town were acquired a few months ago by a company called WAGME. Now, WAGME stands for We're All Gonna Make It, which I think is power of positive thought, perhaps, in respect of the perception of people within the crypto stroke NFT space. I'm trying to use the jargon now. Drag me down with the kids. yes, it appears that you can only buy a copy of the third kit via NFT, so it will be exclusive, so you won't be able to use Reddies. Now, how do you get your NFTs? It looks like you've got to buy your NFTs or acquire your NFTs via a cryptocurrency, so therefore you've got to exchange sterling for crypto to get the NFTs to get the shirt. So it's not the smoothest of routes, as opposed to, you know, rocking up to the club shop with 40 notes and handing it over. So it is exclusive, and what WAGME are trying to do, and I think they might be keen to come on the show, actually, from vibes I've heard. Oh, so okay. I'm not going to be overly cynical here, as you know me.
Not cynical at all, Kieran.
I'm not cynical, exactly. Yeah, yeah. They believe that there is a community out there who will want to do this, to show sort of solidarity with those people that are passionate in their belief of crypto and NFTs and fan tokens and so on. My reservation is that there's ways of showing support, but buying a Crawley Town third kit isn't necessarily going to get you much kudos. And that's not disrespecting Crawley, because they've done well to get from non-league to establish themselves in the EFL. But if there was a way, and we think about the people who would like to be in this, if there was a way that I wanted to send out a message that I'm a virgin who lives with my mum, buying Crawley Town third kit probably wouldn't be it. And then you say, well, once you've got these, you know, what are you going to do with your cryptocurrencies? And I don't know whether you ever saw the episode of The Simpsons where Homer exchanged his dollars for Itchy and Scratchy dollars when they went to Itchy and Scratchy Land.
Indeed.
And then none of the shops in Itchy and Scratchy Land took Itchy and Scratchy dollars. Well, that's my concern here.
Oh, that's the analogy I'm going to use from now on. There's two things, Kieran. The first thing is you think, well, they might be losing out on a bit of revenue stream here from Crawley fans who can't buy the new third kit. But also, what really annoyed me about this is you taking over a club, that's fine, that's great. But don't then send out a message to say that the support of people in the NFT community, in the Bitcoin community, is as important as the support of Crawley Town fans, because it's not. It might be financially down the line, but initially, you've just bought a club. Look after the fans of that club. There's not that many of them. God love them. But they deserve to be looked after first before people in this. It's like, you know, Peter McCormack, who we've interviewed, the owner of, they're now Rail Bedford, who's the huge Bitcoin guru, who recently issued a press release saying, I wouldn't buy Bitcoin at the moment if I were you. Which was slightly bizarre. Now, here's Crawley saying to their fans, see that lovely new third kit? You can't have that. Or if you want it, you have to become part of the cryptocurrency NFT thing that we all know is It's the equivalent of Palace when we were sponsored by Man Bet X saying you can't have the new third kit unless you open up an account with Man Bet X and put bet at least £10. It's just not. It doesn't sit well with me, Kieran, and I would love Wagme to come on to explain the thinking behind this, because I think it's the thin end of the wedge as far as Crawley's concerned. And you know, I'd love to see someone try and do that with Man United or Liverpool's third kit, because yes. just to see the reaction. And again, on NFTs, and we'll, John Terry's name will be mentioned at the end of this story. Cristiano Ronaldo, who agrees to launch a lot of things. Doesn't take a lot, it seems to me, to get Cristiano Ronaldo to launch something. But he's launched his own range of NFTs, and that's with cryptocurrency company Binface. That's not a name that inspires confidence for any. Even if you're supplying bins, I wouldn't call my company Binface.
I think that's producer Guy's auto speller not working. It should say Binance.
Oh, bye, BAFTA. Bye bye. See you later. Didn't even occur to me. I read it. I thought that's a strange name for a company. I didn't even Google Binface because I thought that's just be nice.
Wasn't their account Binface who stood in the elections?
It was. I was thinking more Dusty Bin for the older. Yeah, and that bafflingly confusing 3-2-1. But anyway, whatever it's called, and whoever's. And also, I think it reflects on the cryptocurrency companies that it didn't occur to me that Binface wouldn't be it's the sort of name they give themselves, basically. Topknot, the new cryptocurrency company, Topknot. Oh, yeah, that's great. Anyway, Cristiano Ronaldo has launched his own range of NFTs.
Yes. So I sort of did some background on this. And, you know, what are Binance trying to do by partnering with somebody such as Cristiano Ronaldo? They're trying to get legitimacy and they're trying to get normalization for a demographic. And I'll be honest, I was at a conference recently. And it was a law conference, and the person who said, right, we're going to talk about crypto now. How many people have got NFTs, fan tokens, cryptocurrency assets? And I was surprised at how many people did stick their hand up. But in terms of the demographic, that it was clearly an age related demographic. You know, people who are under 30 who are using other means of making perhaps what they perceive to be investment decisions. Yeah, my view is that these things are not investments, and if you treat them as non-investments and have fun with them, great. Yeah, but as investments, I'm extremely twitchy. Yeah. And when they said, we've already got Snoop Dogg and Paris Hilton involved with Binance. Now, you know, you've got Bobby Numbers for your accounting and financial advice.
Indeed.
Would you consider ditching him for Snoop Dogg and Paris Hilton?
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Right.
Oh, yeah. If only for the free tickets. Of course I wouldn't. No, sorry. But Robert, if you're listening to this, I don't mean that. No, of course I would. But, but again, Snoop Dogg and Paris Hilton are in the Cristiano Ronaldo. They tend to say yes before you pick up the phone. They're saying yes as the phone's ringing, aren't they, essentially?
So what's going to happen here is that there's going to be a range of unique Cristiano Ronaldo pictures, cartoons. We don't know. You know, is there going to be one of him winking at the referee when when he got Wayne Rooney sent off in the Euros? Yeah, just a reminder, some of his greatest moments. In terms of where we are, and I'm not. Yeah, it is a bear market in most things. Bitcoin is down 70% in terms of value, and the Financial Conduct Authority has said, and this is a direct quote: "If you buy crypto assets, you should be prepared to lose all the money you invest."
Yeah.
Now, yeah, it's a bit like having one of those warnings on a pack of cigarettes, and that really has to be got across that particular message. For people say, well, you know, what happens if I'm not a Manchester United fan? Yeah, what about some other football players? We're delighted to announce that the John Terry NFTs are down 99% on their launch value. And so therefore, you know, why on earth are people buying them? They're buying them as speculative assets. And speculative assets at a time when there is economic uncertainty and crisis are probably the worst things to go for, because there tends to be what we would call a flight to tradition. So people are buying gold, people are investing in Swiss, putting the money in Swiss francs to try to minimize any financial damage and so on. So people tend to go for well-known things which they consider to have value. If the equity markets, Bitcoin by its very nature is an unregulated, highly manipulated, and very, very volatile product, and therefore only get involved with extreme caution. We have what we refer to as whales in the crypto industry, where these are sort of individuals or groups who together agree to buy or sell a crypto asset, and that can have a huge impact on price in a very short period of time. And that's the thing which makes me twitchy.
One of my very many, many problems with crypto, NFTs, and I've checked the websites of most Premier League clubs and their announcement of their engagement with their crypto partners, and they all start with a warning about not getting involved in trading them. If you're not experienced, you could lose everything, literally. It's what it says on the Palace website, you could lose your home. But these things are marketed through football clubs at fans, most of whom probably have no experience in any sort of investment. Like I wouldn't know how to begin, but who think, oh, that looks a bit of fun. And then suddenly they're involved in a world they know nothing about. And suddenly John Terry, who I like as a human being, I have to say.
John Terry. Many occasions.
John Terry's saying, buy these, they're a bit of fun. And then 6 weeks later, you've bought them. You may have only have spent 50 quid, 100 quid, whatever, but you've lost 50 quid, 100 quid at a time when people can't afford to lose it. And it's just, I can't find the right word. It's just bin face. That's what it is. It's bin face. And this is a story that's not going to go away until we start learning of people going, being made destitute. It's very worrying, Kieran. Stockport County fans must be very excited right now. They're back in the Football League. I know it's a club that's quite close to your heart, Kieran, in that part of the world. And the money that Mark Stott put into Stockport County has been converted into shares.
Yes. My kids grew up in Stockport, went to school in Stockport, both of them, for all of their education. So it is somewhere. And I used to go along to, Edgeley Park used to be great because they used to have matches on a Friday night.
Of course, yeah.
Which was for old school people like us was fantastic. But they've been on pretty tough times. They not only were relegated from the EFL, but they then went into the National League North. Yeah, they had a pretty bad time. But local businessman Mark Stott, of whom I hear very good things from, my friends back in Stockport. He has invested money in the club. Getting out of the NFL is not the NFL. The National League is getting out of the NFL is impossible because it's a closed league. Getting out of the National League is a challenge, as we've seen, because so many former EFL clubs are down there. Practically, I think it's 23 out of 24 clubs in the National League itself are full-time professional. Lots of the teams in National League North are full-time as well. So he's put money after money after money. The club owe him £7.7 million, which for a club in the fifth tier of football, was in the fifth tier of football, is a lot of money. And he said, right, okay, I'm going to show that I'm not going to want the money back by converting into shares. And the thing about shares is that the only thing you can do with shares is to sell them to somebody else. So the club is never on the hook in terms of, at some point in time, what happens if the owner, sees his ass or sees her ass about something to do, falls out with the fan base and says, right, toys out of pram. So converting shares to equity is certainly a way of reducing that arsey risk. And fair play. And good luck to Stockport this season. They'll get decent crowds and they take loads to away matches as well by National League standards.
It sees his arse, Kieran. This is a standard accounting term, is it?
It is in Manchester.
Oh,
yes.
I see. Okay.
Yeah.
And I think I can sort of work out what it means, but would you like to elaborate on it?
falls out, goes into a sulk, something along those lines.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah, very good.
Toys out of pram, perhaps, in a more subtly way.
Well, talking of going into a sulk, Kieran, this is a first world problem. I wasn't going to mention it to you, but I took a big swig of my tea and I realised I've put oat milk in by mistake.
No!
Oh, just drying my mouth up as we speak. I'm going to have a word with that. I'm slightly ashamed of the fact there's even oat milk in the fridge, but that's my son for you.
And I'm the bourgeois one in this relationship, of course.
My son is not in this relationship, Kieran. It's my fault. I've raised a hipster. And two more stories, Kieran, before we get into that really interesting interview with Joe Hunter. Chelsea have informed HMRC and the FA about an issue with the club's tax affairs before the recent takeover. Now, this I know the word Uncle Terry would use about this, and also got the word arse involved in it. But is this standard practice, Kieran, when somebody takes over a company? Would they warn the authorities that they think there's been a problem? Is this them saying this predated us, nothing to do with us, mate? That sort of.
Well, yes, I think as far as the Bowley Group are concerned, because they have effectively taken over the company, they take over all of the company's responsibilities and any legacy issues. So it looks as if £100 million of the agreed price has been withdrawn until these issues are resolved. Now, what exactly could we be talking about in terms of these tax affairs? First of all, they could be corporate issues. They could be to do with the quite complicated structure at Chelsea. So there is Chelsea Football Club, which is owned by Chelsea FC PLC, which is owned by a company called Fordstam Limited. Fordstam appears to have borrowed a lot of money from a company called Camberley International, which is based in Jersey. The Jersey authorities have frozen £7 billion worth of assets relating to Roman Abramovich, which are located around Jersey. And then who controls Camberley? There are stories, and we don't know how accurate these are, that Camberley itself is controlled via a trust based in Cyprus. And if you say, well, why Cyprus? I used to teach in Cyprus, and it's a great place to teach. But you don't need a visa if you're Russian to go to Cyprus. You know, if anybody ever goes to Larnaca or Paphos or wherever, you'll notice in the restaurants there that the languages are English, Russian, and sometimes German, but normally English and Russian. Cyprus has a reputation as being Europe's money laundering capital, or the EU's money laundering capital. I don't know how accurate that is, but this long trail of issues has made the Bowley Group a little bit concerned. So it could be corporate tax based. Alternatively, it could be to do with the personal tax of some of the executives. At Chelsea, were they being paid via third parties? Has tax been deducted? There has been a series of investigations by HMRC with regards to player activities. Now, I've not seen anything, to be honest, in respect of Chelsea, but has something been revealed as a part of the due diligence undertaken by the Bowley Group? And this is normally to do with image rights contracts. So. Right. There's a lot boiling in the pot, and what can we be certain of? The lawyers and the accountants are going to do well out of this.
I imagine Cyprus are probably very pleased that the UK is no longer in the EU, because they haven't got that competition from London anymore to be the money laundering capital of the EU. This last story, Kieran, is a very odd one. An international footballer who placed bets on his own club, quite significant bets on his own club, has escaped with a ticking off from UEFA and FIFA.
Yes, this is a story which this is Matt Lawton in the Times. Yeah. This is a Gibraltar international player. He gambled. He placed more than 4,000 bets. He is an international himself, including bets on his national team to lose.
Right.
Now, that's not very good. Although you think, hold on, we're talking about Gibraltar here. Yeah, so yeah, you're not exactly you're not going to get short odds on them to win. But there were also some bets involving his own club, one of which has been flagged up under the heading match manipulation. Bet365, I think, have been cooperating. I think Bet365 flagged this. They've got very good algorithms that spot things like this. So it does make you wonder, why did it take them 4,000 bets into all of this before they said, this name of this person we got on an account, and that does seem to tie up with that international player. But at the highest level of football, we know that football players do gamble. You know, you know many footballers, and I've dealt with charities and so on. But what they tend to do is, you know, with the odd exception, they don't tend to bet on football themselves. At the lower level of football in some countries, and again, we've seen this very much be the case in cricket. There are sometimes financial incentives to get involved in influencing simple things such as next throw in, yellow card, and so on. And it's difficult to police because the players are not particularly well paid, so therefore the incentives to gamble or the potential rewards of gambling do become significantly greater. So. That's not great. There was also an issue with regards to somebody at UEFA who appeared to have placed a load of bets, and all he got was, again, a bit of a finger wagging. Mm. What type of signal are we sending out here? You've got to be like Caesar's wife, I think, if you're in football administration when it comes to gambling and the sport.
A friend of mine, comedy writer Pete Sinclair, lovely chap, he likes a bet, but he's the most cautious gambler in the world. For example, he put a tenner on England to win the third test when they had 20 runs to get with 7 wickets standing. he got about 40p back in his account, but a win's a win. It's like, he says, if you do that 10 times a year, it really adds up. To £4. Interview time, Kieran. In times gone by, Kieran, it was probably best not to ask many questions about what was in your halftime pie and how it got to the ground in the first place. But they're an important part of the match day experience, and we decided it was time to stop talking about agents and amortisation for a while and find out about something that really matters, chicken and mushroom or steak and ale. So we spoke to Joe Hunter, who's the founder of Piglet's Pantry, who supplied delicious hand warmers to a lot of clubs. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. What if you had access to tomorrow's tools today? In Notion, you do. It's the AI-powered workspace where any team can turn ideas into action.
My career is sort of a bit like being a butterfly, and I'm always jumping from project to project. So therefore, Notion helps me from summarizing meetings notes and automatically generating action items, to getting answers to any question in seconds. If you can think it, you can make it. And Notion is for everyone, whether you're a Fortune 500 company or a freelance football finance lecturer.
You can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us. Strangely, I've got more questions for you than I had for Tracy Crouch, MP, about the fan-led review into football. I've been so excited about talking to somebody who supplies pies for Football Ground. So it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, we do need to get this out of the way early, Joe, so we can have an amicable conversation for the rest of it. But you're a Brighton fan, and you were apparently the official match day pie sponsor of that club, weren't you? How did that happen?
Indeed I am, yes. Well, 11 years ago now, we were going up to buy my son's season ticket, and he wanted to sit in North Stand with all his mates, and obviously mum had the credit card, so I was sponsored. So we went up, and I had my hard hat on, looking around. I was pretty impressed, to be fair. I mean, the stadium was actually awesome. You know, we hadn't had one in the town for a while, so it was good to see it. And I was just chatting, saying, what does community stadium mean to the club? You know, will you be using local suppliers? And Richard Hebbard at the time just said, do you make a good pie? And I was a bit like, surely you've got your pies sorted out. And he mentioned another competitor that I'm not going to say who it is, that he'd put them in the bin the day before because they were horrific. And could I please design some better ones? And then he would buy them. And that, as they say, is the conversation that led to Piglets being properly born. We were a very small bakery in Shoreham up to that point. And then we went through several rounds, 100 pie-offs around the country, I think it was, three local suppliers. We were one of them that were put forward. And you get that magic 9 o'clock Monday morning, you've got the gig. And
wow.
You now need to make 2,500 pies when you only make about 100 in your little bakery. Back at home. So, yeah, the pies were actually designed in my kitchen. And we did take on that project that changed my life, really. And that's where it all started. And my children have always been Brighton fans. I was later to the table, having joined through Piglets, but I now am a staunch Brighton fan as well as supplying all the pies there. And yeah, the first opening game, Tottenham, I think it was, friendly. Lots of tears and goosebumps and things. We made 2,500 pies, which is more than the average sold originally at that size stadium. And we sold out within 5 minutes. We didn't even get to, you know, to opening the turnstiles properly. They were sold out. And we were like, okay, we're making them all by hand at this point. So it was a bit of a labour of love. And we got to sort of 5,000 the next game, didn't hit kickoff. And then eventually got to sort of 7,500 and was asked politely to leave the stadium by the head chef to go and find some premises, please. So that's what we did. And it hit 10,000 before we hit a ceiling at Brighton Hove Albion, which was an absolute record and completely unbelievable and a true testament to both the fans and to our wonderful people that make the pies, really.
Wow. And in those early days, did you used to hide in the kitchen or did you walk around the ground in disguise, checking how people were eating the pies and enjoying them?
No, it's such a blur. I didn't have time. I was too busy hand crimping 10,000 pies. I mean, did I have time to watch the football? Absolutely not at that point. I might have saw 5 minutes of the game and lots of people stopping me saying these pies are amazing, but I was mostly busy making them at that stage. So, yeah.
That's high on the list of things I wasn't expecting to hear someone say today. I was too busy hand crimping 10,000 pies. talk us through some of the other clubs you supply pies to now, Joe, because it's quite an impressive list, isn't it?
It is. Sorry I didn't get that all together for you because we've got so many we keep adding to the list every week.
That's all right. Really.
We started pre-COVID with about 70 events across the UK, and then obviously COVID hit and we had to reinvent ourselves with online afternoon teas, which was also spectacular. We came back post-COVID. We've got 220 events across the UK now, and those include 14 Premier League football clubs. So we supply the likes of Chelsea, Leicester Football Club, Wolves, AFC Wimbledon is a new client. I was just going to mention them. We go as far and wide as Scotland, so we've been up to Rangers. And we do also supply rugby across Principality. We do a little bit of work with Twickenham. It's pretty far spread now. So lots and lots of clubs across the UK now have come over to the pink side and and have joined Piglets in their passion for making good products and feeding people well. So, yeah, it's been quite a movement, really. It's been slow progress the first few years because we were busy trying to settle in new premises and we've moved about four times now. So we weren't really in a position to really kind of take on the market in a good way. But now we are, and we're in a new 28,000 square foot building. It's purpose built for the whole purpose of us being able to grow. So now we can supply and serve many clubs across the land, including we do some Henderson sausage rolls for Sheffield, which is amazing. Wow. So we have lots of little quirks and things going on all over the country, really.
I was going to ask you about Scotland later on, actually, because I've got no idea what goes into a Scotch pie, but I do love a Scotch pie. I don't like to ask, but so are you producing, you know, Scotch pies for them, or are you trying to introduce them to your range of stuff?
Absolutely not. Scotland do their Scotch pies very well, and yeah. It's quite a unique process. So no, we're not making Scotch pies for Scotland. They do that extremely well out there, and I wouldn't even begin to impose on that kind of work, really. It is quite unique. Their pastry is very unique, and their flavours and what they do with their meat is quite unique as well. It's got something called mace in there, and it's quite a unique flavour. Yeah. We actually sell our own pies to them, and we've started that. It's a very new project, Scotland. So we've done some of our hospitality pies, which you would see in, as they call the prawn sandwich brigade. You would see those up in the hospitality section at Hampden Park. We've done a bit of work there. And Rangers, it's still very early days. We started kind of supplying into small areas to see if they would like our products, and got a lot of good reviews on Twitter, which is always good.
We are a football finance pod, Joe, so we do need to talk about the economics, if you don't mind. But I think that's a lot of clubs that you provide pies. And I think most football fans, even now, still assume that their pies are coming from a kind of huge mass producer, and that's obviously not the case, is it?
No, that's not the case at all. We have a very small amount of machinery here. We're still very much a handmade process. All of our sausage rolls are still made by hand as well. So we are not a push-button, as I call it, a push-button manufacturer. We don't really see ourselves as a manufacturer. We're all chef-led. I'm a pastry chef by trade. My son, who supports and helps all the chefs make the fillings, was self-taught as a chef. So we are all chef-led. We make really good quality products en masse, is what I say. So I would see us as very much as a food producer. We're not small enough to be artisan anymore, because we are making a lot of products now. But we're certainly not on the lines of putting things down line machines that you see on the Greg Wallace shows and things. It's nothing like that at all. In fact, if he wants to pop down, I'll show him how to make them properly by hand. That'd be great.
I would be careful what you wish for, because you'll lose a whole day while Greg tries to flirt with you, Joe, essentially. But I'll pass that message on to him. How does it work, getting a contract for a new club? Do you approach a club to say, we can do you a better pie for the same money, or are clubs putting their contracts out to tender?
Do you know, most of my last 11 years has been through words of mouth. So chefs move around, they move to other places, and then they promote you, or people will come to somewhere where they've had an event and say, where did you get that product from, or where did you get that Scotch egg from, or where did you get that sausage roll from? And literally people come to us and email us and say, we found your product at, can we come along and have a look, or can you come along and talk to us? And I think we had, at one point, we were going to go and approach Lord's with our sausage rolls, and literally, I kid you not, the Monday after we were about to go and talk to them, they'd been at Twickenham and they rang us and said, those sausage rolls, can we have them, please? So very fortunate in the fact that, fortunate, or you make your own luck, I suppose, but our products speak for themselves, and most people come to us saying, we would like to try those products. And again, we've won quite a lot of awards as well. So we've won the Stadium Business Awards twice. We've won one silver, we won first. And then people do approach us at places like that too. So when you kind of, you know, you are out there going to a lot of these sort of awards evenings, you do meet people, and CEOs do quite often come up and have a chat. That's how I met Hull. So we support Hull, and they came over and said, oh my God, you know, these products are amazing, can you come and see us? So we generally, most of our work is done through word of mouth. So we don't go out and do big pitches. There are occasions when we do, and people will come along, but it's usually after we've supplied for a while and they want to take it across the rest of their group, or they'll want to do it in other places, and then we need to tender for it.
And when you're working out a deal with these clubs, would each of them have an optimum price for the pie? So, for example, would Chelsea say, our fans will pay a fiver for a pie, while Hull will say, our fans won't pay more than £3.50?
It's partly that, and partly it will be what they've been used to buying. So we have two challenges. One is a challenge, obviously, of the person who's buying that's going to the football every game. But as I've proved time and time again, you know, people will pay a good price for a good product. If it's served well and you have the right product, then people will pay for it. But our education has been where people have been used to paying absolutely nothing for pies. And as you can see, some of the old kind of style pies that came along, there wasn't much meat content in them, or they weren't particularly produced what I would call it's not something you would go and buy in a restaurant, put it that way. So I think it's the education has been around us having to try and, you know, compete, which is hard, especially with rising prices of food at the moment. It is tough. But at the same time, being sort of like putting our line in the sand and saying, no, we can't afford to make that for 50p less. We just can't. That's just not going to happen. Right. So we have to cut our cloth accordingly. We have to put our line in the sand and say, no, we can't afford to do that. And, you know, in the main, some people will say we can't afford to take that on, or they don't believe that their customers will pay more money for it, or they're just happy to make the margins they're making and they will just, you know, stick with what they've got. And that's absolutely fine. It's not for everybody. But we are gradually winning people over with our products. And I think as soon as chefs taste them, they are always, you know, very happy. As you mentioned before, you know, we make all our own fillings. So the chicken and mushroom pie you mentioned will have our own bechamel made in it. That's quite unusual for our industry.
Yeah.
People don't normally make big batches of bechamel in brat pans, you know, by chefs to make that pie as good as it can be. Mostly they're doing things in big machinery, and it's completely different ethos from what we do. And for that, you have to pay. Obviously, labour's not cheap, so yeah.
Of course. Do you notice regional patterns in terms? I mean, are you selling more vegan pies at Brighton, for example, than you might do at Leicester?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the plant-based movement, the vegan movement, is a big one. I think it is becoming, something that we all need to pay attention to, and we've all got a responsibility to look at that. We've moved all of our vegetarian products across to completely plant-based. So we have meat options and we have plant-based. We've also looked at changing our pastry. So our pastry is plant-based, believe it or not. So that surprises some people. But we've worked really hard on the things we can do something about without compromising on the quality and the taste. So to answer your question, there's a lot of people buying more plant-based, and it is increasing, but not as big as you'd expect it to be. It's still the steak and ale at Brighton is still the best seller. So what we are doing this year is we're introducing a steak and sweet potato, which is a 50-50 split on meat and veg. We are testing that out on the market to see if they will respond well to that. And we're hoping to bring people on a journey. So rather than saying you have to eat plant-based vegetarian only, or you have to have meat, trying to move people to a middle ground where we can all start to feel, okay, we're making better decisions. We're not quite there yet, but we're making better decisions.
Yeah, and are clubs asking you to do that is one question. Yes. And also, economically, is it cheaper to produce a plant-based pie than a meat-based one?
Yes and no. I mean, it depends what you're putting in the product, as always. Right. So if you're using corn-based products or alternatives to meats, then no, they are much more expensive. And interestingly, they can be quite pricey. But our meat costs in this country, due to various factors in the last few months, in the last year, have gone through the roof. So for us to try and maintain pricing, to try and maintain costs so people can afford to pay, we are introducing. So it's a twofold process, really. One, we want to do it because it's the right thing to do. But secondly, it will help with the increased costs that are going on in the market.
And in terms of numbers, what's the ratio? If you've got a crowd, if you know, for example, a football club has 25,000 fans each home game, how many pies do you supply for 25,000 people?
It varies across each ground, to be honest with you. At Brighton, they still buy around 7,500 to 8,000 pies a match. And that's generally we sell out. So it's about 28,000 to 30,000 crowd there. Somewhere like Leicester, it would be around, they buy about 6,000 products, but then their best seller is the Red Leicester sausage rolls. So which they also sell equally as many of those. So it does vary across every single ground is different. It depends what offering they have. So there's an awful lot more. The one good thing I found in spending time in this world is that the stadiums are really kind of putting some really good food out. You know, there's a lot more offering now than there used to be. It used to be just the pie and Bovril back in the day. But now you have some really good sort of street food offerings. And I think they have become, you know, a lot more interested in offering retail food, and they've recognised that obviously there's a lot of people that don't sit in hospitality that actually would quite like to eat a nice meal. So I think it depends on the offering of each club as well. Some clubs offer some really good opportunities to you know, try some new food out. So it depends on what the mix is, really.
I'm a bit worried about you saying the steak pie is the best seller at Brighton, because I've been telling Kieran for 2 years that Brighton fans only eat quinoa. He's going to be holding them out. Talking about back in the day, Joe, do you find football fans still resistant to change? When I was growing up in my part of South London, there was a particular pie, and it confused me because the lovely man who ran the chip shop that I grew up nearby was called Peter. So I assumed that Peter's pies were his, but they weren't. But we had Peter's pies, and they managed to pull off this brilliant trick of having scaldingly hot pastry, like geologically hot pastry, and tepid, lukewarm meat inside, which is how I like my pies. That's how I grew up with my. If my pies haven't got a little silver foil bit on the bottom, then I get confused. How do you find that football fans are kind of stuck in their ways, and they tend not to try new products?
Yes, I think that is very true. I think they definitely are. There's definitely people that do the same thing every single match day and have done it for the last 30, 40 years, however long they've been going. That is still the case. So they'll have very staunch ideas about. Some people will definitely want the chicken gammon leek pie, and they want it at the same kiosk, and they really yeah. They'll be absolutely mad if they can't get it from that kiosk because there's not enough stocked in there. So there are definitely people that still do that. I think that's quite a common thing. You know, I still quite like to wear my hats and stuff and make sure that I've got my, you know, my lucky things with me. So I think that is that's endemic in anybody who goes to watch their clubs play, really.
Well, I mean, if you're 2-0 up at half time and you can't get your pie, then you're convinced it's your fault that you don't win the game eventually. Pies, they're such a serious business now, Joe. I was amazed by how many pie comparison websites there are. My favourite being, I discovered yesterday, because there's an interview with you on one called Pyrate, which says pie fans ahoy, which I like, and they rate your pies very highly. But people take the pie experience very seriously. I mean, clubs like Wigan, for example, who are immensely proud of their pies, and across the Northwest especially. So it's an interesting one. So people are looking out for your pies, aren't they? It's not just word of mouth anymore. There are people talking about your pies, rating your pies, judging your pies, which is a kind of must be a strange thing for you.
Yeah, it's like I've my baby's gone out there and I've let it out in the world, is how it feels sometimes. Yeah, and I like the fact that sometimes social media can be good and bad, obviously, but I do like the fact that fans can speak to us directly and they can talk to us about, you know, their experiences. Quite often, people will. Put their own club in there and say, why aren't you buying these pies, which is lovely. But yeah, it's an impassioned subject. It's you know, it is a really big subject, and people have very definite ideas about what a pie should be. So, you know, you mentioned up north, I mean, Morecambe have won several. We seem to compete them at quite a lot of the British Pie Awards. Up there, so they certainly would be up there with you know, the same sort of process, handmade products, etc. Some people have very definite ideas about what pastry should be, whether it should be made with, you know, animal fats or non-animal fats. So there is an awful lot of discussion around, you know, what makes a perfect pie and what would make a perfect football match, really.
Yeah, two more questions for you, Joe, because I appreciate you taking time to talk to us. The first one I have to ask you, I really have to ask you this. Where do you stand on people, I'm not saying me, but maybe people like me, who may buy one of your lovely, beautiful pies and the first thing they do is put a big hole in the top and squirt ketchup in it?
I try not to cry. I don't. I'm really open minded about things like that. I see it happen quite a lot all over the ground. Not just that, but mustard, and people have very definite ideas about how they want to eat their pies. I'm not judging. If that's what keeps you happy and makes your matchday experience extra special, then absolutely crack on. I'm not gonna judge you for it. I think everyone has their own particular ways of eating things, and we should just leave them to it.
Well, in my defence, Joe, I have to say, my mum, God rest her soul, was the worst cook you've ever met in your life. She was a terrible cook. She used to produce this stew that looked like paraffin on a puddle. But so my dad and I basically got through 15 years by putting ketchup on everything, essentially. And it's a habit I've never been able to get out of. But it's just a little tiny squirt, but it just seems like to... It just seems to bring out the flavors, just enhances the flavors. Last question: What's next for you, Joe? Will you not rest until all 92 clubs in the English Football League are selling your pies at half time?
To be honest, that would be lovely if they wanted to buy from us. That would be amazing. But I think we've kind of moved into different directions now. So not just the football world, but certainly into other areas. So we are working with the likes of the Merlin Group, with Chessington, and places like that.
Okay,
so we're diversifying quite massively at the moment. So I think as much as, the football world is definitely taken us by storm, and we are doing a lot of work for the football clubs. The rest of the year, it's quite nice to have other things that balance that out. So we're looking at trying to balance out the growth of the company so we have plenty of work all year round, really. So that's what we're doing currently. And also I mentioned the afternoon teas. So yeah, that part of the market has, we've got a whole new pastry section now of 10 people that are making beautiful cakes and beautiful afternoon teas that go around the country, and also serve people like Goodwood, we're certainly working with people like that too, so that's always good too.
And they're all available. I mean, our listeners can just go to your website and get a lovely afternoon tea for themselves, can't they? It does occur to me two things. I mean, would you do a strawberry pie for Wimbledon, for example? And you mentioned Lords earlier. I presume at Lords you would be able to charge, or they would be able to charge, a little bit more for a pie than most football grounds, would that be true?
I think the retail price is very different across the country. So, I think the most expensive I've seen our pie charge for is £6.50.
Crikey.
Yeah, exactly. But central London areas, I won't mention the clients, but central London areas tend to charge more money. But then, you know, they are they're in those kind of arenas for that reason, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah.
Strawberry pie sounds interesting. I haven't got into sweet pies yet, really, particularly. We've done a few smaller ones, but we haven't done any large sort of sweet pies yet. But we do lots of handmade, hand-raised quiches for Wimbledon. So, yes, we do lots of other stuff, and cannolis and sweet stuff, so fish rolls, etc. So that type of thing that would work well for an afternoon tea market, we do quite a lot of that sort of work, really.
Joe, it's been really lovely to talk to you. It's been really interesting insight. I can, producer guy doesn't like us doing product placement, but I can wholeheartedly endorse your sausage rolls. Oh my God, they're good sausage rolls. And a chicken and mushroom pie. That's fantastic. As I say, it's better than the one I had in Stoke in 1994, and I didn't think I'd ever say that. But thank you for talking to us, and the best of luck with all your endeavours in the future.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me on today.
I found that a really interesting interview, Kieran. There's two things to come out of it. First of all, I'm so disappointed to learn that Brighton are still carnivores when it comes to pies. Discovering that the steak pie was the most, that's really, it won't stop me taking the mickey out of you, obviously.
No.
You know, you've got that up your sleeve. The second thing, and this is a one-off, because obviously at the end I was angling for freebies. Saying, come on out, Joe, you've mentioned the product, must be something in it for us. And she went, no, well, you two are fine. Why don't I offer something to your lovely listeners? So as a one-off special offer, not to be repeated, consider it a summer present from us and from Joe. If you order something from Piglet Pantries and you use the code POFP15, POFP15, then you will get 15% off that order. Not to be repeated, one-off present from us as a thank you for listening. But it was a really interesting interview because, again, it's one of those things, you have your pie at halftime, and I do apologise for squirting ketchup into it, but I can't stress enough how bad a cook my mum was. The irony being that she spent the last 10 years of her life as a chef in an old folks' home. Clearly, they loved something you didn't have to chew. But it's... but it's because you do take it for granted. It doesn't occur to you to think about the margins. To think, you just kind of think these pies turn up in a van. You don't know where they're made. You don't know what the money involved is. But it's really interesting to hear about the fact that some clubs are happy to charge £6.50 for one of the pies, and other clubs wouldn't go anywhere near that.
Yes, yeah, and we are grateful for Joe, and it's great to know that the art of hand crimping still exists,
isn't it?
In 21st century,
yeah. It is actually, in a world of mass industrialization and bin face, it's nice to know that there's somebody hand crimping pies. That John Major would like that as well, wouldn't he? His summer afternoons on the cricket green, maidens cycling by on their way to hand crimp a pie before evensong. Puts a spring in your step. Thank you to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to the pod as well, that would be very kind of you. You can do that by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have a question you'd like answered on the show, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
First of all, thank you to Joe for being so nice to us. Because we'll be honest, we have tasted the pies. We are under the influence of a good pie now. I am so fastidious. I won't have a steak and ale pie because it's got the word ale in it, which I suspect. I don't know anything about alcohol. But I suspect I'd still be able to drive home even if I had two of them, which on occasion I'm very tempted to do. But thanks for all the support for the show. As always, we do appreciate it. Patreon is one vehicle through which you can support the show. Another one is to go on to your app. Here comes Finley, and give us some form of review. If you think we're worth 5 stars, that's fantastic. It doesn't matter what you say on the review. And we're approaching the summer holidays, so under those circumstances, it doesn't matter who prepares or who produces the show or even who presents it, but we'd rather see it presented by Flegal, Bingo, Drooper and Snorky from the Banana Splits.
That was a weird program for a Saturday morning, wasn't it? I love the fact Finley comes in as soon as you mention pies. Finley's in. I'm just chuckling at your notion that you could perhaps try and fool the police officer who accuses you of driving under the influence. But I've had 10 steak and ale pies. You'd be fine, Kieran. Even you'd be able to. In fact, the chicken and mushroom pie, I think the chicken and mushroom pies I grew up on in my local chip shop. I think vegans could have ate the chicken and mushroom pies from my local chip shop. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The Price of Football. Price of Football.